Hi everyone, and welcome back to the podcast, as well as it's going to be broadcasted on YouTube. This time I'm going to talk about root resorption, and it will be a good way to start into the dental implant as a next phase of the podcast. So in root resorption, this is when the tooth eats itself, and there is multiple etiology out there, but nobody knows exactly what it is. So if we see the literature, we can see that there is some predisposing factors like dental trauma, orthodontic treatment, and that you'll see it mainly on the apices, meaning the tip of the roots inside the bone. They flatten. That happens a lot with orthodontics, but also it can lead to a resorption and into throughout the root itself. And long time ago, they used to do whitening from the inside of the tooth, and that caused also some kind of resorption. Regardless of all of that, we know that there is two kinds. There is the internal resorption and there is the external resorption. When we talk about internal resorption, mainly it is an inflammation caused by the pulp itself, by the nerve itself. And when we talk about external root resorption, it's mainly caused by the PDL cells and the sulcus around the tooth. And unfortunately, in both, the treatments are not successful. As much as a lot in the literature says that if you have an internal resorption, you can lead to a arresting of that resorption. I can show you cases and cases that doesn't, on when it happens on the outside. Depending where it is, mainly it is going to be a continuous pattern because you can't stop that resorption once it started. And if we look at one of the latest systematic reviews, and they said that about the treatments, none has been leading to any solution, and they couldn't find anything in the Cochrane database that showed that there is an efficacy of any treatment. So patients are left with, unfortunately, one and only one treatment in the long run is losing the tooth and replacing it by a dental implant. As much as it is traumatic and nobody wants to have it, but this is the fact. You can do the root canal and it's not going to stop it. It's going to continue. And the more it continues, the more you're going to lead to resorption of the bone all around it. And now, why do we lose bone all around it? It's a very simple fact. It's an inflammation. And once you have an inflammation, bone does resorb. With that in mind, let me share with you a recent case that was referred to me. And this is a lady in her 70s. And she started having the symptoms on that tooth, the canine, upper left canine. We call it number 11. Not really a very accentuated feelings, but nevertheless, she had something that was going on. She went to an endodontist. Endodontist took a CBCT, and when he took a CBCT, it showed and it revealed a big resorption at the sulcus bone level. And it started small and kept increasing in size. The patient was procrastinating about it. Now, when we look at it from a dental point of view or from a surgical point of view, you can see she has an extremely high smile line and very thin phenotype. And we talked about these things before, and this is very important to review because this is how a surgeon will decide what treatment can be done. And in this case, you can see this is one of the highest risk because it can lead to a major deficiencies if we don't do and maximize everything to the point. So finally, I was able to convince her to do the treatment, and luckily the treatment has been very successful. But if we look at it from both sides, you can see the eminence or that accentuation of the root. It's very classic for the canine, and you can see a little bit of bleeding upon probing. But when we look at the CBCT there, we see how extensive this resorption it is. Now, sometimes those resorption don't come with only one tooth.
they can be for multiple teeth. And that's why it's very important to review with the CBCT if there is other sites that we are missing on a regular radiographs. And here, when the tooth was, when we tried to take it out, you can see here very specifically, this is the kind of soft tissue that happens. This is the inflammation that takes place. And I submitted this tissue to the pathology, to my very dear friend, the pathologist at NYU, Dr. Trochelse, and she sent me a report that it is an inflammatory tissue. So we know it's an inflammation that causes it. If we do a histology of the root itself, you can see osteoclastic activity, meaning the cells that eats the bone, and they are going to be lined up on the dentin. But nevertheless, this is an inflammation, and that inflammation is caused by multiple etiologies. One cannot predict which one it is, and can by certainty say that this is caused by this, to lead to this. So that's why it is an inflammation, and that's why the treatment of it, unfortunately, has to be drastic and a tooth replacement by a dental implant. So here I missed one thing to tell you, that when we looked at the scan, you can see that there is no bone on the outside. It's very challenging, and her apex is coming out of the bone. So I picked this case because it's a very challenging case. And now I don't have the follow-up, I mean, the long-term follow-up of the case, because it's a recent case. So that's why I'm not going to show the treatment of it. But nevertheless, we will hopefully in the future review that. If you want, we can do it at least in 5, 6 months after the healing and the restorative has been finished. But let me share with you a different kind of resorption. This one is an internal resorption. And again, it's the same thing. When you look at this patient, she's 24 years old. She had a history of orthodontic, not very successful, as you can see. But nevertheless, she did fall when she was young and hit her tooth. And that's why she has this kind of composites on her two front teeth. And when we look at the X-ray, you can see that there is a root resorption. And if you can see this root resorption, it's really interesting because you can see it close to the bone and also close to the where it used to be the nerve. So nevertheless, this is a patient that fell, hit her two teeth in the front. You can see the bondings, and that's why they did the root canal for her early on. And you can see this is a most probably a traumatic lesion that took place at the fall that she had and led her to that resorption. So once we look at this now, we look at the CBCT, and the CBCT doesn't show anything from the outside, but rather you can see it here and you cannot see it on the CBCT. So that is mainly an internal root resorption. Again, it didn't matter. It is, she has the root canal for years and it's extending in size. So this is the smile analysis for the lady. That's very important to take a picture of the patient smiling because it reveals a lot of things. You can see there's a big asymmetry between the two teeth. When she fell and they did the bonding, they didn't do it the right way. She has a high smile, lesser than the patient before, but nevertheless, it shows the gingival margin, which is, for the lame people listening, it's this one here, the scallop. And that makes it a high smile and a challenging. There's also an asymmetry in the smile. You can see she sees more on, you see more on the right side than the left, but nevertheless, this is a challenging case. Here we can say it is a thin phenotype or a thick phenotype. A debate is hard to tell because there is a change in the shape of the tooth. But nevertheless, when we look at the CBCT, we have a good thickness of bone on the outside. And with that, as you can see, we have also, when we take an intraoral scan, which is a digital impression, and we lay it over the CBCT, now you can see that the number is above 1 millimeter. That's a thick phenotype. And we can see that there is a good buccal plate. But the challenge in here, it's not as much as the biotype, meaning the soft tissue and the shape of the tooth, but rather it's the apical area. And you can see the nasopalatine, which is that the nerve and the vessel that come on the palate. So that was published in my paper about the apical topography, I call it. And here it makes it very challenging if you're going to go free-handed. Huh? So that's why it is important to think about digital guided surgery of such of one sort or another, meaning either with a guide or with a robotic hand or a navigation. And you can make the guide as we did in here. And we synergized it with a software that allows us to make a 3D printed temporary crown fitting exactly to the implant position. And here you can see it. This is the layout of the temporary. And you can see the guide in place and the depth of the implant up to the bone and the thickness of the soft tissue and the distance from the buccal plate and also the positioning apically. And then we can make a model of that to fit the temporary in place. And then we can look at it for the 3D printed temporary. And with that, now we can see that we are all prepared. We go for the surgery and we do an extraction. Then there is terms outside a traumatic extraction. And I always make fun of it because an extraction is an extraction. Either you are fine or not fine. You are ripping an organ out of the soft tissue and that is still a traumatic. You can see how the tissue become bluish after the extraction because this is where the bone is. And this is all that soft tissue that is non-supported. Now, if you remember before the papilla was up to here, the papilla was not traumatized in this extraction, but it does retract. That is the that's what happens when you do an extraction on the anterior. So this is the tooth. You can see the resorption here clearly and evidently live. You cannot say only on the scan. And we put the guide and we place the implant immediately. And the gap that we have, we fill it with a bone. Here we layered the allograft, cancellous and cortical, meaning for the lame people, it's a density of bone. And there's one more mineral versus the other, and both of them are human source. And I do that as a protocol of mine, layer them like this, because you use the more mineralized towards the outside, densifies the bone and retard the resorption. So it gives a good bulk of the seemingly of the root that it used to be. We put the temporary, and I want you here to pay attention how this papilla has retracted. That's a inevitable thing. But that's why it is so important to do an immediate implant and an immediate temporization. Even a healing, customized healing abutment, rather not anything because the soft tissue is not supported and it will never come back. And you can see here within few months, the papilla bounced back to its original size. The same temporary, never, nothing has been changed. And we can see the same shape of the tooth that was 3D printed and designed on the computer. It looks the same as it is in the mouth. And that is the radiograph for the temporary after the placement of the implant, and that is at 4 months after post-placement. And this is when it went for restoration. Definitely, the restorative dentist needed to fix the sizes, the differences in size between the two things, and make it more aesthetic. But the most important for me is to look at the soft tissue, how beautiful it is, how thickened it is, and look at this convexity of the soft tissue, which is similar to a natural tooth. And you can see the discrepancy in size between the two because, you know, she's asymmetrical and that's how we are. And this is the final in place. And you can see now the shape of the teeth is much better. It is more equidistant. And this is a 3-year follow-up of this case radiograph. So I couldn't find a better way to access The implant placement, other than doing such a thing, which is the resorption, that fits into two subjects. One, a subject that is still contradictory, and unfortunately, when it happens, there is nothing you can do about it. Fortunately, it's when it happens, there is a replacement, and that is very important. We always have to look at things in a positive way. And be positive that today and grateful that today we have dental implants, which is one of the best solutions that happened into humanity. They're very successful. They are at a rate of 97% because nothing in biology is 100%. In the immediate, especially in the anterior, they are more successful than the posterior. Recently, I am writing my third paper on immediate implants, and this time with guided implant placement. And I am at 135 implants, and it started literally when it happens that we are mainly focused on the Straumann implants, and one of them is the BLX. So I picked up on it not long ago in the 2020, actually after the pandemic, because that did not launch in the United States for Perio at least until the 2020. And I've been comparing it with the others that we did before. So we are at 135 within 2 years. We have 50 implants anterior, and they are 100% success. The success rate of the study has been decreased by 3%, and mainly the failures happen in the posterior. No explanation for that other than either the quality of the bone or infection that took place. It will coincide with my other paper, which was also 97%. When it came for the posteriors. So, in that in mind, today we can do a lot of things, a lot of interesting things. It's all about who you go to. Everything is treatment planned properly from the placement of the implant to the temporary crown, that they are both of them synergized through the computers, and you can have a correct temporary, so it makes the surgery very straightforward. Should not take more than an hour between extraction, placement, and temporization if everything is lined up. It is very successful, very rewarding. Patients loves it. So with that, I want to thank you again for listening. Now we will start talking more about dental implants, and hopefully we'll start with our interviews. So, thank you, and have a wonderful end of the day for the weekend. It is a Sunday. Now it is in the afternoon in New York City. So I wish you all the best, and good night.